of flowers attended by a hummingbird, and skulls, and the Galway hooker, which was a boat, not a tramp, and faces and names and sayings. It was clear this wasn't just body stamping. This was someone's profession, someone's art, not a job. And his name was Stephen Kane. He was in his 30s, skinny with a long black beard, slicked back hair, earrings and sleeve tattoos. A thin ring also pierced his lip. He was edgy, perhaps or trying to be, but there was a salt of the earth air about him, and Tara liked him immediately. "I care about attention to detail," he told Tara in between clients. "That's the most important thing." Tara didn't have any tattoos, but standing here, she suddenly knew what her way in would be. She didn't want it to be large, but the more she thought of it, the more she knew. At first she imagined something beautiful yet Irish, like a Celtic knot or a Celtic cross, or even something written in the Irish language. But this wasn't for her. This was for him. And then she knew. "Winnie the Pooh?" he said. "Do you have a photo?" She brought Winnie the Pooh up on her phone. She pointed to the name Pooh on his red shirt. "I'd like this to say Thomas instead." He raised his eyebrows and nodded. She got it on her back, just behind her left shoulder. There was pain and the buzzing of his needle, and her eyes watered, but she welcomed it. He would be there now, on her back, always with her. When he was finished, he asked if he could photograph it, then placed a protective plastic cover over the tattoo and told her to try and keep it there for the rest of the day. "I'm sorry," he said, "if wee Thomas is no longer with us." Tears came to her eyes. She nodded. "I've three young ones myself. I can't even imagine." "No," Tara said. "Nor should you." She dug out her purse. He held up his hands. "It's on me." "I couldn't." "I insist." "Only if I can return the favour." "Before you go too far, I'm a married man." He winked. "Notice, I didn't say happily." She laughed. It was obvious from the numerous photos displayed throughout the shop of a beautiful red-headed woman with three children that he was joking. "Come to Irish Revivals sometime. Bring the kids. Maybe you can find something you like." "I wondered if you were any relation," he said. Tara nodded. "My uncle. You probably know him. He owns the salvage mill." "Ah, of course I do. You're not the first customer to come out of the salvage mill." He winked. "I know," Tara said. "That's why I came to you." He nodded, a grin spreading across his face. "I've been waiting to hear the verdict. Was it a yes or a no?" "I'm not sure either," Tara said. What on earth was he talking about? "Did you see the tattoo?" "The rose?" Tara guessed. Stephen nodded. "The special order rose." He winked. She smiled, wondering what in the heck he was talking about. "I didn't see it." "Oh, I assumed you had. But you know the story." "Bits and pieces," Tara said, still floundering in the dark. "Do you have a photo of the tattoo?"
"Aye."
He turned the album toward her. There was a rendering of a gorgeous red rose. But that's not what had her mouth open, staring. Wrapped around the rose was a glittering diamond ring, and next to it, a question mark. This wasn't just a tattoo. It was a marriage proposal. Tara went straight to her favourite cafe for the second best breakfast in Galway. It came with eggs and toast and potatoes and rashers and Irish sausages and black and white pudding. She knew she'd never be able to eat it all. She didn't like the pudding, neither black nor white. But she hadn't decided whether it was more offensive to order it and not eat it or ask them to leave it off the plate. So she simply ordered the Irish breakfast and decided to let the pudding fall where it may. She'd never be totally accepted here anyway. Maybe they expected the Yank not to eat her pudding. Why did they call it pudding anyway? It was definitely not pudding. Did they not realize how odd it was to name delicious cookies digestives, but pork meat and fat pudding? The Irish had a wicked sense of humor, all right. The rest of it, though, would be devoured. Suddenly, her appetite was back in full force. She had to admit that an adrenaline rush came with trying to figure out a crime. Only when she was seated by a little table near the window with her mug of coffee and her Irish breakfast did she start mulling over what she knew so far. Had Johnny proposed to Rose before he disappeared? Maybe she had turned down his proposal and he fled from the rejection. That hardly made sense. Why didn't Rose mention this? Because she's lying to you. Because she killed him? Because she was bilking him out of money with her doomsday predictions? Was Rose the one who left the thorny stem by Johnny's door? Was it an answer to his proposal? Or had it been Johnny himself, furious because she rejected him? Tara set the what-ifs aside. She could only focus on the facts. Someone had set out to whip Johnny Meehan into a paranoid frenzy. And they had succeeded. He had burned most, if not all, his bridges a few days before the murder by upsetting customers with accusations about missing items. He had accused his employee and tenant of stealing, and he thought Carrig Murray was plotting against him somehow. And as Rose pointed out, someone had certainly been plotting against him. Maybe Johnny witnessed the killer deal the deadly blow to poor Emmett, and then he ran for his life. Was Johnny hiding somewhere in fear? Could he be nearby, watching it all unfold? Those actions hardly sounded like a man who had just gotten engaged. Either he hadn't proposed or Rose had turned him down. She hadn't gone into the cottage the morning she had found Emmett lying in the doorway. What if her name hadn't been written on the wall then? What if someone, her uncle, snuck it in later? Because he had seen her. He knew who she was, or what if Johnny was in the cottage when she found Emmett, crouching with the murder weapon? No. The time of death was sunrise. Tara came in the late afternoon. Emmett had been dead for hours. If Johnny was still there waiting, what was he waiting for? Nobody would wait around in a tiny cottage with a dead body. Maybe he had been hiding nearby. Had he planned on turning himself in and then he saw her? She had the Meehan look, dark hair and blue eyes. Her grandmother had it, according to her mother. It's possible that Johnny Meehan could have recognized her on sight. Was the theory worth floating to the guards? Did it even matter? No matter what, Johnny wasn't there now. If he had just installed a security camera both at home and at the mill, maybe none of this would have happened. Or at the least, he could have proven his innocence. Older people were so resistant to technology, to change. She could see that to a certain extent. Parts of Galway looked like what Ireland probably looked like 100 years ago. And yet, they were also a modern city with internet and iPads and televisions in pubs. The blend of both was what made Galway, and probably all of Ireland, unique and magical. She had heard through the grapevine that the guards had searched the entire area where she had found the cap and came up empty. Was the person who stole items from the mill, selectively dropping them about town like secret breadcrumbs, turning the folks against each other? Paranoia was a powerful tool. The killer was wicked smart. It almost seemed scripted. But what in the world was the end game? Bells jangled and heads turned to watch a beautiful young woman enter the cafe. She was tall and dressed all in black. Her hair was cut short and spiky, but you could have shaved her bald and heads would turn. Her cheekbones, her lips, her huge eyes. She was a stunner.
"There's Hamlet now,"
the cafe matron said with a big smile. "Heya," the girl answered.
"To eat or not to eat?"
the matron replied.
"Just tea and biscuits,"
Hamlet answered.
"It's only a short break."
Tara had to force herself to look away before she was busted for staring. This was the star of Carrig's play, Alana's friend, or girlfriend. It wouldn't hurt to chat her up, see if there was any light she could shed on the mysterious Carrigmurray. And, if possible, see if she could get her hands on his mobile phone. Tara threw money down for her breakfast and hurried out of the cafe after the actress.
Hamlet!
She was forced to yell when she realised the woman was going too fast to keep up with. The woman turned and waited with a patient smile for her deranged fan to catch up.
Yes?
I'm sorry, I don't know your real name. The actress beamed. Good? She leaned in and whispered.
My name is Magda. I hate it. I prefer to stay in character as much as possible. Please, just call me Hamlet.
She winked. Will do. Tara held out her hand.
I'm Tara, from New York.
Hamlet shook her hand, confusion stamped on her pretty face.
I love New York.
I think New York would love you. Hamlet laughed.
What makes you say that?
Are you kidding? You're playing Hamlet as a woman, you know, as opposed to a woman pretending to be a man? It's incredibly exciting. Tara realized as the words rolled out of her mouth that she meant it. She loved the idea of a female Hamlet.
Thank you. Are you coming to the show?
I wouldn't miss it. In fact, I'm planning a little surprise.
What kind of surprise?
Tara clasped her hands together.
We're planning a big surprise party for Carrig after opening night.
Hamlet's brow wrinkled in confusion. Tara imagined she was a great actress. Her face was so expressive.
Who is we?
Some theatre friends of Carrig's from New York. We came to see the show and surprise him. The lie just rolled off her tongue. What was wrong with her? For a second, even she believed it to be true.
Are you an actress?
Tara tried to imagine it. Standing on stage, under the lights, looking out at all those people. Nope, nope, could not do it. Even thinking about it gave her stage fright.
Me?
Heavens, no. I'm a designer. When lying, it is best to stick somewhat to the truth. Hamlet grinned.
That's so lovely. We adore our stage designers. Oh, Carrig will be thrilled.
Tara gently placed her hand on Hamlet's arm. But there's one special guest we need to invite, only I don't have his number. Hamlet looked more than ready to be in on the surprise.
Who is it?
George. Tara said the name confidently, as if assuming she knew who it was.
George.
Hamlet's eyebrows raised.
What's his surname?
I'll be honest, I don't even know his name. I just know Carrigmurray was on the phone with him when I went to the theatre to meet with him.
I don't understand. How do you know this person on the phone is a friend of his?
Hamlet was no slouch. Tara leaned in, hating herself for the next part. If the show goes well, it might travel to New York. The actress's eyes popped open. She could see it all. Lights, Broadway, her short pixie cut, the new rage.
Oh my God.
You can't tell a soul. She mimed, zipping her lips and throwing away the key.
What does that have to do with the person on the phone?
Tara glanced around, as if she didn't want this information to leak out. I think he was talking to a famous theatre critic. I think they got into a squabble on the phone.
Really?
I know, it's none of my business, but you know how it is. Suddenly a personal argument bleeds into professional life.
And they'll drop the show.
That's my fear.
Is it because of the rumours?
Rumours? I can't say for sure, but yeah, I'm sure they are a factor. Tara was getting too good at pretending she knew what the heck she was talking about. Maybe if we could get this critic here for the party and they mend fences, well, then it's all back on. I'm sorry, she wanted to say. I'm normally not a liar. I'm a good person. I'm just trying to find my uncle and catch a killer.
What do you need me to do?
Do you ever notice where he leaves his phone when you're rehearsing? He puts it in the pocket of his suit jacket. Does he ever take the jacket off? Eyes still wide, the woman nodded. Tara put on a dejected face. Never mind. How silly of me. I don't know his password. The girl beamed. I bet it's Shakespeare's birthday. Really? Hamlet nodded. It's 4/23/1564. He's Shakespeare obsessed. I'm sorry. I shouldn't ask you to do this. Sticking her nose into this was one thing. She shouldn't drag innocent people into this. Are you kidding? It wouldn't be the first time I've played a spy. Hamlet winked. I like the excitement, if you must know. And I'm extremely good at it. Are you sure? I insist. I'd do anything for Carrig. He's given me the role of a lifetime. Tara wrote down the date and time of the phone call. Here's the number I need. If you can get into the phone, it should be in his call history. The girl bounced on her toes. This is so exciting. Just be careful. Her smile faded. Careful? Tara felt sick. Was this a huge mistake? You don't want to ruin the surprise, and I don't want him angry with you if he catches you. Hamlet grabbed her hand and squeezed. I can do it. He won't know a thing. Chapter 16. You did what? Danny's stunned look conveyed her worst fear, and shame flooded her. She had made a terrible mistake asking Hamlet to sneak a look at Carrig's phone. They stood in the back garden behind the mill. This time, the mini oasis did little to soothe her. I know. I'm not proud of it. Tara was sick over the lies she told Hamlet, even reminding herself she was trying to find her uncle and unmask a murderer. Wasn't alleviating her guilt. I'll just go see her again. Tell her it's off. No! Danny headed for the side of the building. Come on! His long strides lengthened the distance between them, and she had to hurry to catch up. Where are we going? We're going to help her. How? We'll distract Carrig long enough for her to get the number and return Carrig's phone without any hassle. Okay, good. He stopped abruptly, and once more she almost ploughed into him. On one condition. He held up his index finger. What? This is it. She tried to keep the irritation out of her voice. This wasn't Danny's fault, this was all her. This is what? This is the last thing you're going to do. That's a pretty broad statement. You know what I mean. We get the number. We find out who he's talking to. If it's important, we tell the guards and you wipe your hands off this. If it's not important, you tell no one and you wipe your hands off this. Do you agree? Tara nodded. She meant it too. She was in over her head. If she kept going, she was likely to make too many mistakes. She was even torn about asking Danny about the paint cans at Rose's. Her uncle had made the mistake of accusing people without proof, and look where that got him. Mistakes could be fatal. At the very least, she needed Danny's help, and whether she wanted to admit it or not, she didn't want Danny to be guilty of anything. She liked him. An image of Grace sprang to mind, hanging out her window, watching Tara and Danny on the sidewalk below. Tara sighed. I could also drop all of this right now. We could tell the actress the truth. Danny shook his head as they crossed through the mill and to the front door. It's too late, he said. Sometimes the truth is way more dangerous than a lie. The Nun's Island experimental theatre rehearsal was in full swing when Danny and Tara entered. Hamlet was on stage in the middle of a monologue filled with turmoil. Danny and Tara waited in the back of the theatre until Carrig called a break, and only then did they step out of the shadows.
Danny!
Carrig boomed when he saw him. Tara waited for him to yell at them to get out.
The set looks magnificent,
He pointed. On stage were painted panels depicting a castle and rolling hills with fog coming in. Tara turned to Danny and stared. He didn't meet her eyes. You did that? Danny, she could have sworn, was blushing. Carrig strode up the aisle beaming and clapped Danny on the back.
Are you here for your check?
If you don't mind, Danny said, still refusing to look at Tara. He doesn't want me to know about his artistic talents. Why? Carrig turned to the actors.
20-minute break.
Tara glanced at the front row seat, where a suit blazer was draped, and then made eye contact with Hamlet. The actress glanced at the blazer, then she made eye contact with Tara. They were set. The three were nearly out of the theatre when Carrig stopped.
Need the key to my office, he said.
Oh no, please let it be in your trouser pocket. But Carrig whirled around and headed for his seat just in time to see Hamlet's hand stuffed inside the pocket of his blazer.
Hey!
Carrig shouted. He started to run toward her. She tossed him a set of keys.
I heard you, she said. Thought it'd help.
Oh!
Carrig came to an abrupt stop. He stared at the keys in his hand, then at Hamlet.
Thank you.
She took a bow. It was all Tara could do not to applaud. Hamlet was awesome. Carrig returned to Danny and Tara, and they headed for the office. Hopefully, while they were gone, Hamlet would find out who Carrig had been speaking with. Or, to be more exact, who Carrig had been threatening to keep quiet, so that Tara could find out why. Located at the mouth of the Galway Bay in the middle of the wild Atlantic Way, and accessible only by boat, the Aran Islands were a treasure of three. The largest island, Inishmore, the middle island, Inishman, and the smallest island, Inishere. The 1,200 residents primarily spoke Irish, and the rugged limestone rock islands boasted everything from ancient graveyards, medieval ruins, stone beaches, and a fort built in the Bronze and Iron Ages at Dun Aengus, on a cliff 300 feet above the Atlantic Ocean. And of course, shops and pubs and restaurants and cows. Tara wanted to see all three islands, but today she and Danny were setting out for the Inishmore to find George O'Malley, the man Carrig had warned not to tell Tara anything. She had heard the islands were a place stuck in time, a peek into what Irish culture might have been like long ago, a place where progress hadn't usurped culture. W.B. Yeats purportedly once said to John Millington Synge, "Go to the Aran Islands and find a life that has never been expressed in literature." Farming, fishing and tourism were the main economic stays, along with artists, craftspeople and musicians. Spiritualists were drawn to the islands too, perhaps to hear murmurings from long ago ages, fossils buried in limestone whispering their secrets. Tara could not wait. The wind from the ferry ride blew Tara's black hair straight behind her, and she stared out at the waves churned by the boat as the vibrations hummed through her body. Danny stood beside her. "Do you think Johnny could be hiding out in the Aran Islands?" she asked.
"Yes. Or he could be in London, Paris or Rome."
"Wouldn't this be a bit closer and more in tune with his personality?" Danny nodded.
"It would indeed.
Though it's still dangerous to hide this close to home. In plain sight." "Only if he's guilty," Tara pointed out.
"He has to be guilty of something."
"What do you mean?"
"He's in hiding. What innocent person does that?
One who's terrified for his life?
You think he witnessed the murder?"
"It's possible, isn't it?"
"Why not go straight to the guards? You know him better than me. Can you think of any reason?"
Danny frowned.
"He's a stubborn man, but not a stupid one. If he is innocent, witnessed the murder, and didn't go to the guards, then something has convinced him that he wouldn't be believed."
Tara stared out at the churning waves. "Or someone.
Or someone.
Danny echoed. The ocean, so vast and powerful, in comparison humans are so, so small. For a moment Tara let all her worries fall into the churning waves. They were just temporarily sharing this bountiful earth, fooling themselves that they were in charge, had control. It was liberating to let go, even if it was for just a moment. The true inhabitants were the rugged cliffs, the soft peat, the blossoming heather, the thrashing ocean. Here it was easy to remember the old adage, don't sweat the small stuff. Here, Tara was reminded, she was the small stuff. Some might find that depressing. She found it enormously comforting. 50 minutes passed in what felt like seconds. Soon the ferry's whistle sounded just as the edge of Inishmore appeared, green and rugged and welcoming. The ferry docked, and the passengers filed out, following the hands that motioned the tourists to the road leading up to the official entrance to the island. There, tour guides waited with horse-drawn carts and minivans, and for those with stamina, a line of bicycles at the ready. Pubs and shops and cafes were scattered among the breathtaking green grass and stone and sea. Danny looked at his watch. George O'Malley will be playing a trad session at 3. He nodded to the pub visible in the distance, a white cottage with cheerful yellow trim. That gives us 2 hours, Tara said. She glanced at the bicycles. No, please. No, riding my red bike around Galway City is one thing, but here it would be like trying to ride to the top of a mountain. Surely the bicycles are only here to terrify folks into taking the minivan tours. Danny scoffed. Can you believe those lazy sods? He stretched his arms wide. It's a grand, fresh day for a bike ride. He gave her a long look. Unless you're not up for it. She had a hard time breaking away from his twinkling eyes and teasing smile. Are you kidding me? I am so not up for it. She wanted to take one of the shuttle van tours. You'd have to drag me kicking and screaming into a car. I'm team bike all the way. Enough. Too much. Please, please drag me kicking and screaming into the van. Be a man. Pretend it's your idea. Danny edged up to her and pointed at the hill rising in the distance. Whoever invented his cologne had nailed it. Like, really nailed it. What awaits is winding roads and steep hills, endless stretches of rocky roads. Not for the faint of heart. Tara grinned. I'm game, if you are. Please, please say you would rather ride in a vehicle. He winked. Don't say I didn't warn you. I won't. But I'm already thinking it. She had had enough of him torturing her. Best get it over with. She paid for a bicycle and hopped on, determined to get a head start. Tourists in the idling vans looked out the window at her, staring as if she was part of the tour. She could imagine the guide speaking. Look at that idiot. Thought she was going for a little bike ride. We'll be picking her body off the hills the next time around. Tara pedaled harder. If a little engine could do it, so could she. It took Danny no time at all to catch up. The roads wound around undulating green pastures and ragged cliffs, climbing up, up, up. The air was fresh and spiked with the taste of the ocean. Her heart and lungs hadn't exerted themselves this much in a long time. The tour vans rattled by, heads plastered in the windows with sympathetic looks and friendly waves. The remains of an old stone church came into view around the next bend. Danny, ahead of her now, pointed and nodded to it, indicating they could stop if she wished to visit the remains. Yes, she shouted in the wind. They parked their bicycles so they could walk among the ruins. Tara loved being up close to such history. Around the next bend, a lone cow lay in the middle of a patch of green with the ragged rocks, dropping cliff, and churning ocean as her background. Several times they had to stop to allow sheep to cross the road, their white and black wool coloured with splotches of dye, the colours correlating with the farmer who owned them. She envied these animals. She wouldn't mind lying around here all day. The first hour flew by, and Danny suggested they head back. Tara was relieved there wasn't time to take the hike up the 300-foot cliff to the archaeological site of Dun Aengus. She was already feeling anxious this high up. Would she ever stop associating heights with her son's tragic accident? She had never been afraid before. On the ride back, made easier since it was downhill, Danny told her how back in the day there was only one guard and one priest for all three islands. They would fly from one to another in a little plane, and when the guard was on one island, folks on the other two would be misbehaving. The islands had also borne witness to devastating storms over the years. There was something so miraculous about such a rugged, isolated place, still surviving and thriving. As gorgeous as it was, Tara could hardly imagine spending her whole life here, as more than a few of the locals must have done. She could imagine the stark, bleak winters when the fog rolled in and the tourists sailed out. After 2 hours of biking around the island, a pint of ale hit the spot. The musicians pulled chairs out from the corner, sat amidst the patrons at the round tables, and started in with a jaunty tune that lifted Tara's spirits. "That's him," Danny said with a nod to an older man in a wheelchair, playing the guitar. An oxygen tank sat by his side. "That's George." "How do you know?" "After we got the number from the phone, I asked around. There aren't many older musicians in wheelchairs on this island." "That must be so tough here," Tara said. "The terrain alone would be difficult to navigate."
"Everyone who lives on these islands are hearty souls, so they are," Danny said. "And I can only imagine it's even tougher if you've got a mobility problem."
Tara nodded, noting that Danny was an empathetic person, and she liked that about him. They fell into a comfortable silence as he sat back and let the music take them away. An hour later, Tara had almost forgotten why they were there. Danny ordered them lunch, fat French fries that the Irish call chips, with vinegar and salt, and even mayonnaise to dip. Next came lump crab cake sandwiches that were so good, Tara felt obscene eating them in public. The musicians played all her favourites, Dirty Old Town, and The Irish Rover, and Galway Girl. But she was even more delighted when they played Fairy Tale of New York, and she found herself heartily singing along and wishing it were Christmas. Danny smiled beside her, and for a moment, they were just two people enjoying each other and the music, and as they said here, the crack, or the fun. And she was having fun. She didn't want it to end. Several couples were dancing, and outside, even the ocean seemed to churn in rhythm. When it was over, too soon for Tara's liking, Danny waved George O'Malley over, a fresh pint waiting for him at their table. Before getting down to the real reason they were here, they let him know how much they enjoyed his playing and rich, singing voice. He had a wide, doughy face and thick white hair, complete with trim beard and a joyful grin. When he heard Tara's surname, his eyebrows shot up in surprise.
"You wouldn't be related to Johnny Meehan, would you know?"
"That's why we're here," Danny said. Tara nodded. "I'm his niece." A scowl came over his face.
"If he's after me lied again on behalf of Carrigmurray, he can't have it. Not until I get what I asked for."
Danny and Tara exchanged a look. Carrig had mentioned something about a granite slab, but that wasn't the primary thing on her mind. George O'Malley was acting as if he hadn't heard about the murder and the fact that Johnny was missing, presumed on the run. It was plausible in a sense that these islands could be protected from gossip, but given his phone call with Carrigmurray, they were pretty sure George knew everything that had happened to Emmett Walsh and that Johnny was in the wind.
"Johnny Meehan hasn't been seen in days," Danny said. "He's a missing person."
Suddenly he began speaking to George O'Malley in the Irish language. It was obvious from George's cascade of horrified facial expressions that Danny was recounting the murder. George's eyes flicked nervously to Tara.
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"Thank you." He took a long draw of his pint, set it down, wiped his mouth.
"Why are you here?"
Tara recalled what Carrig had said to George. "What do you think I told her? Nothing.
exactly what you're going to tell her?
She asked.
We know Johnny paid you a visit recently. Can you tell us about that?
George sighed.
I'll show you, if you buy me another pint, and then roll me home.
Chapter 17. There wasn't much rolling to be done. George lived in a flat behind a souvenir gift shop, just down the path from the pub. The back entrance to his dwelling had been outfitted with a ramp, and it was a cheerful space, albeit a tad cluttered. Despite the gorgeous scenery, Tara bet there were days on end with nothing to do, especially if you weren't able to get physically active. She wondered why he stayed. There would be better services for people in wheelchairs in Galway, she guessed. But the answer was most likely simple. This was home. He put the kettle on for tea and retrieved a box of chocolate digestives, and soon they were all sipping, nibbling, and staring at one another.
He wanted that,
George said suddenly, jerking his wheelchair around and pointing up. There, above the door to the restroom, was a light the size and shape of your typical globe, set in wrought iron.
It's out of an old theatre in Dublin. Carrick Murray just sold it to me. Then he turns around and wants it back. Insane. Hadn't even had it long enough for a speck of dust to cover it. I wouldn't sell it back to him. Until he suggested a trade.
He wheeled his chair back around.
No trade. No light. No is no.
You told him you'd trade it for a stone slab? Tara said. Granite with a female face carved into it?
What?
From the tone of his voice, it was obvious Danny didn't like being left out. George sighed.
There's a stone slab I want, all right. Carrie got me to agree to a trade. Johnny told me he had a lead on it. I said that's a trade I would do, and I meant it.
He opened his arms.
But if Johnny had a lead, it must not have panned out. No slab.
He seemed to invite them to look around as proof.
No slab, no light. Last time Johnny was here on behalf of Carrick, I told him so myself.
So many folks were either waiting for objects from Johnny or missing them. This was important. Tara could feel it. She just didn't know how it fit into a bigger picture and what, if anything, it had to do with Emmett's murder and Johnny's disappearance.
Did Johnny get upset with you?
Danny asked gently.
With me?
George wheeled back to the table.
Who would get upset in an old man in a wheelchair?
When did he pay you this visit? Tara asked.
It was a Friday. He showed up at the noon session. Wanted to see if there was any other way to get the light. As you know, he left empty-handed.
The day before the murder. How badly had Carrick wanted this light? Was he angry enough to kill for it? Why sell it, and then turn around and want it back so desperately? It didn't make sense. And even if he wanted it bad enough to kill, it wouldn't have been Emmett he wanted to kill. He would have killed George for it. Every time Tara felt like she had just picked up a thread to this mystery, another one unravelled. Are you sure Johnny made the ferry back?
We didn't follow him out to the boat, mind you, but I didn't see him again. If he's hanging out here, love, someone would have spotted him.
George's hands began to tremble. He smacked his lips. He was nervous, but maybe he just didn't like strangers in his flat. When's the last time you spoke with Carrick Murray? Tara's voice came out more sing-song than she meant it to. Danny shot her a look. They hadn't exactly agreed on their approach to this question. George rolled his eyes up and around as if turning the pages of a mental calendar.
I'm not sure why.
His eyes narrowed. Danny cleared his throat.
Tara overheard a recent conversation between Carrick and yourself. Carrick warned you not to say anything to her.
George's eyes were now barely slits. Tara didn't know the human eye could do that. Now she wasn't sure they should do that.
How did you know he was talking to me?
I saw your number flash on his screen. Actually, Hamlet found his number in Carrick's phone, but George didn't need to be bogged down in the minutiae.
How did you know it was my number?
It's a smartphone, Danny said gently. Your name was programmed into the phone.
Outrageous, George said. Big Brother is watching. Too much drama. I live all the way out here to avoid drama.
We meant no disrespect to your privacy. Tara is trying to find her uncle.
Please, Tara said. What is Carrig hiding?
George wheeled away from the table to a nearby window. He parted the curtains. The view looked out on a hill, the path from the ferry and the thrashing sea.
That wild batch of water is all the drama I need.
I'll keep looking for the slab of granite, Tara said. And you can keep your theatre light.
Emmett Walsh has my slab of granite, he said.
He caught himself.
Had. He rubbed his chin. Well, you reckon it's in his fancy castle.
And just like that, a little piece clicked into place. Perhaps Carrig had murdered Emmett. Maybe they argued over the granite slab. Was it possible?
Danny and Tara exchanged a look.
How do you know Emmett has it? Had it?
Because he was heard bragging about it 1 minute, then claiming it was missing the next. Emmett Walsh was a snake of a man. He should have been run out of Ireland by St. Patrick himself.
Tara was starting to see where this was going.
Emmett either couldn't hand over the slab because it was missing, or he wouldn't hand over the slab because Johnny hadn't given him his pig, she said.
It all came back to the blasted pig.
George nodded.
Can ye imagine all this over a little piggy?
He shook his head. He looked at the sky.
A storm is coming in. The two of you best be on the next ferry.
Danny stood. Tara did too, but reluctantly.
I still don't understand. What's the big secret?
George folded his hands into a steeple and looked thoughtful.
Did ye know Carrig is doing an all-female version of Hamlet?
Yes, Tara said.
Imagine that.
Tara waited.
He brought in some fancy talent out of the Edinburgh Festival, and he's hired a fancy set director.
Tara glanced at Danny. I thought you painted his set. George's head jerked to Danny. The two men stared at each other for a long time.
What's going on?
Tara said. The spell broke. The men backed away and averted their gazes. In that instant, it was clear the two of them were now keeping a secret. Tara stepped forward.
Danny?
I did paint his sets, Danny said. He never mentioned another set designer.
Course he didn't, George said. Except on paper.
Tara sighed. Why didn't people just get to the point? Why was Danny lying to her now? Or was she misreading the room?
So, Carrig is inflating his budget. What's that have to do with Johnny?
George turned and challenged her.
Is that the question you should be asking?
Tara chewed on it, inflating his budget, collecting more money than he's spending.
What's he doing with the money?
Yes, chicken, George said.
What is he doing with the money?
Chapter 18. Was Carrig Murray skimming from the theatre? How much? And yes, what was he planning on doing with the money? Did it even matter? George seemed to be hinting that it did, and Tara was convinced he knew more about it. But it was clear that was all they were going to get. The ferry ride back was choppy and silent. Tara didn't want to accuse Danny of withholding, but that's exactly what he was doing. The two of them stood at the rails of the ferry, moving up and down with the boat, neither of them saying a word. Maybe she was wrong to be investigating this with him. After all, he was a suspect too. What if he was only going with her to keep her from getting at the truth? What if she was going around with a killer? Did he see her as the enemy and he was keeping her close? The silence continued during the bus ride back to Galway.
A few minutes after the bus started moving, Tara nodded off. By the time she heard the screech of brakes and the belch of the engine as it shut off, she was startled to find her head on Danny's shoulder. Oh, God, did she just drool on him? She jerked up and apologized. He laughed, a low, comforting sound.
No, really, I'm so sorry.
I've had worse bus rides, he said with a wink. She laughed. She couldn't be wrong about Danny. He was so nice. But weren't murderers capable of being nice? After filing off the bus and making their way back to the centre of town, they eyed each other, like teenagers on a first date.
I'm not going to snoop into Carrig's financial records, Danny said.
No, Tara said. Of course not.
Don't give me that. We just stole his phone records.
I know. But you're right. We don't know what we're doing, either of us. I'm going to stop. Danny didn't look as if he believed her. You and George exchanged a look when he talked about the fancy designer Carrig had on his books. Why?
Because I'm the designer. I'm not fancy. And the pay wasn't above standard.
What do you think he's up to? Danny looked away.
I have no idea.
He looked into her eyes.
Please. Let's leave this to the guards. Will you promise me that?
Tara resisted the urge to kiss his cheek. It's been a long day, she said. Let's both get some rest. Tara and Brianna met in Eyre Square, near the fountain. The rectangular public park was centrally located, adjacent to the train station and littered with college students and tourists. John F. Kennedy had visited Galway shortly before his death and made a speech in the park, so it was also known as the John F. Kennedy Memorial Park. Tara had packed a picnic lunch and staked out a spot on the grass. She laid out a blanket she bought in town. It reminded her of the one she always took to Central Park. Brianna Cunningham was all smiles. When she sat down, a few people moved away from them. It was the guard uniform. It made folks keep their distance.
Does it bother you that people see you coming and get out of your way?
No, Brianna said with a smile and a wink. I consider it one of the top perks of the job.
Tara laughed. She did like this woman, even if she also wanted some information. Tara brought out the mini ham and cheese sandwiches she'd made, along with her homemade potato salad. She had had such fun spending a day at the shops, then making the picnic back at Johnny's cottage. She was starting to fall into a rhythm here, walking with Hound, going through the salvage mill, relishing the historical objects and finding stolen minutes to pretend she was just here on holiday. Today felt like one of those days. She waited until they had finished eating and exhausted getting to know you talk, to gently swing the subject around to the investigation.
Do you think it's silly that I brought in that cap I found?
Oh, no,
Brianna said. She stopped after that, but her eyes had lit up for a second.
Did it help in any way?
Brianna nodded. She looked around, then leaned in.
Traces of blood were found on the cap. It was Johnny's cap, all right.
His blood?
Tara said. The alarm was evident in her voice. Brianna put her hand out.
Don't worry. Just trace amounts. It's not an indication of any major harm to him, but it does tell us that at some point he was wandering the grounds.
Is that unusual?
Brianna shrugged.
When you're investigating a murder, you'd best treat everything as if it's unusual, like.
Perhaps he had seen the murderer.
But we've combed the patch and there's not a single other bit of evidence, so I'm afraid it doesn't help much.
Tara sighed. I was hoping it would.
We're sending cadaver dogs to the area just in case.
Tara shivered. She prayed they wouldn't find anything.
If he does turn up, I hope you're not going to be too disappointed.
What do you mean?
Johnny Meehan was an odd one. And take it from me, this is a city so full of odd ones that you really have to stand out to earn that moniker.
He's still family. I don't need him to warm up to me even. I just want to make sure he's okay.
What if he killed Emmett? Will you stand by him?
I'm not even sure what that means.
Visit him in jail, like.
Oh, Tara hadn't thought of that. Probably be back in New York.
Ah, tell me what it's like, Brianna said. Paint me a dream of New York so I can imagine myself there.
Tara laughed, was happy to turn the conversation away from her uncle, and for once talk about something other than murder.
Well, on a beautiful Saturday morning, my favorite thing is to buy a latte and go for a stroll in Central Park.
Tara was in Johnny's office straightening out his papers when the phone on the desk rang. She jumped and then laughed. Afraid of phones now, are we? She felt a tingle of excitement as she picked it up. Maybe it was a customer. She was dying to source something for someone.
Irish Revivals,
she said into the phone, feeling slightly guilty that she was answering it instead of Johnny.
How may I help you?
There was a pause.
Is Johnny in?
It was a male voice with an Irish accent, but beyond that, she had no idea who he was.
No.
The question startled her so that she didn't know what else to say at first. There wasn't a soul in Galway and probably half the neighbouring towns who didn't know about that murder and Johnny's disappearance. She was pretty sure the betting shops in Galway were taking odds on whether or not Johnny was the killer, whether or not Johnny was alive, and whether Ben Kelly was going to get the boxing ring. Tara was going to do her part to make sure that last one didn't happen on her watch.
Who is calling? I sold an item to Johnny a while back. I just wanted to see if it met his needs.
Oh, she tried to keep her voice light. What was the item? Tara took a sip of her coffee.
Cast iron pig.
Tara choked on the hot coffee, nearly spitting it out.
You all right?
The man asked.
You're calling from Manchester?
Was this the banker?
Manchester?
He sounded alarmed.
Sorry, I mistook you for...
The original?
The man filled in with a laugh.
Yes, my apologies.
The original?
Ah, no worries. I'm in Donegal, love.
Right, it's all coming back to me now.
Are you an employee at Irish Revivals?
She sensed there was something he wanted to say, but he didn't know if he could trust her.
I'm the owner's niece, from New York, and the one running it at the moment.
Are you aware of the situation?
What situation? Darn it. She had to play along.
Oh, yes. Believe me, I am aware.
Perhaps I'm foolish to call, but after that much effort, I just have to ask. Did the client believe it? The client? Emmett Walsh, believe it. Believe what?
I'm afraid the client passed away, Tara said, before he could receive it.
Ah, so we'll never know?
No, sadly.
She stared at a mug of pens on the desk, trying to figure out how to get him to spill what they were talking about without revealing that she had no idea what they were talking about.
Do you think he would have believed it?
I should say so. I know that doesn't sound very modest of me.
Oh, I totally agree, Tara said.
He would have believed it.
The irony. Him passing away when I went to so much trouble.
Yes.
So sorry for your trouble.
Right, Tara said.
The longer she talked to this man without knowing what he was on about, the higher the chances she would slip and say something that alerted him to her charade.
It must have been difficult,
she said, still tripping in the dark.
He laughed. Now you see why I'm calling. It was a real work of art.
I even got the patina around the ears right.
Wouldn't you say now?
An image of the pig's head resting on the fisherman's palm sprang to mind, followed by Emmett on the floor staring up with his glassy eyes. She pushed the image away. Johnny Meehan had hired this man to replicate the cast iron pig that had belonged to a princess.
Did you happen to get a look at it?
Tara bit her lip. Was the pig she saw the replica or the original? Her best guess was the former. It was harder to imagine someone tossing the original away. The question still remained, why toss it in the first place? One good reason leapt to mind. It was the murder weapon and someone wanted to get rid of evidence. Either way, this man had no idea that his item could have been used to murder the client. She had to keep that in mind. He was greedy and taking pleasure out of cheating someone out of something, which was horrid. But he did not know the entire story. Yes, Tara could not wait to end this conversation. I think in the end it looked exactly like the photo Johnny sent me. I'll make sure Johnny knows you called. Anyway, I'd be happy to work with Irish Revivals again. Please keep me in mind. She hesitated. May I have your phone number? Doesn't Johnny have it? I'm sure he does, but just in case. He gave her his name and number. She was going to have to turn it over to the guards. At this point, getting to the truth was more important than any shady business practices Johnny might have been involved in. If he had done this before, cheated a customer out of an authentic item, why then any past customers could have wanted him dead. Why did Emmett Walsh wind up being the victim? Was my uncle the intended target and Emmett just got in the way? Or did Emmett find out Johnny had the pig replicated and he stormed up to the cottage to confront him? It would have destroyed the reputation of Irish Revivals. Ben Kelly would get his boxing mill. The deception was a dark secret, a powerful weapon that could have easily been used against Johnny Meehan. And Tara had to face it. Johnny may have killed to keep the secret. Under normal circumstances, maybe Johnny would have just confessed that the pig had been stolen and let the chips fall where they may. But Emmett Walsh was no ordinary customer. He was Johnny's best customer. So Johnny went to extremes to satisfy him. Illegal and unethical extremes. Oh, the tangled web we leave. Her mother wouldn't have done a shady deal like that, no matter what pressure was being brought to bear. Maybe it was the first time he'd done it. Maybe Emmett was putting too much pressure on him and he cracked. With the relentless campaign of Ben Kelly to get the mill combined with his biggest client threatening never to buy from him again, everyone seemed in agreement that Johnny had purchased the original pig from this banker in Manchester. When it disappeared, he commissioned the artist in Donegal to replicate it. If the one tossed in the bay was the forgery, then where was the real pig? Did the murderer have it? The more she dug into this case, the more questions she unearthed. The weather had taken a nasty turn, and it was predicted to last all week.
It's going to be lashing rain, the woman in the Galway cafe told her. We're going to have to watch for floods.
Tara sat by the window watching the wind whip down the street. Soon the rain began to fall, splattering the pavement, fogging up the window. The bell dinged and an old man whisked in, shaking off droplets. Took Tara a minute to realise it was the fisherman who reeled up the head of the pig.
How you, Richard? The woman sang out. The usual?
I sure look it,
he said, and sat down. That must have meant yes, for the woman nodded and disappeared through the kitchen door. She returned shortly thereafter with tea and porridge.
You won't be out on the boats today, she said.
Thank God, he said.
I was supposed to take the coppers out today. Were you now? What for?
Seems that little piggy head I reeled up is what killed Emmett.
The woman gasped, and so did Tara.
Is it now?
Seems the indentations on his poor head are an exact match for the ear or something like that. I'm not supposed to say a word.
I didn't hear a thing.
Suddenly the two heads snapped toward Tara, as if just realising she was there.
Nasty weather, Tara said. They nodded, then looked away, this time speaking in whispers.
Tara's mind was reeling. The pig was the murder weapon. Another piece in place. Yet it still didn't add up to a whole.
Chapter 19.
I'm afraid if you don't sign the lease today, you are going to lose the deposit.
Tara listened three times to the voicemail left for Irish Revivals, then finally jotted down the address left by the female real estate agent. What lease? She was starting to grow weary of all the shoes dropping, If only they came in pairs and were her size. It was nearing the point in her day when she would normally take a walk. She would visit this real estate agent face to face and get some fresh air at the same time. She tried to reach Carrick Murray, but he hadn't returned her calls. Had George O'Malley told him of their visit to the Aran Islands? Maybe she would stop at the theatre before setting off for the real estate office. She would take the rusty red bike. She was starting to grow fond of it. The theatre had a sign on it: "In rehearsal, do not disturb." There weren't any fencers in the tiny yard. She tried the gate, mainly out of curiosity, but it was locked. She imagined Danny finding out she was here after she had sworn she was done investigating. The call from the artist in Donegal and from the real estate agent had stirred up her interest, making it nearly impossible to stop. She wasn't hurting anyone, and she wouldn't put herself in any danger. She wouldn't steal anyone's phone again or push too many buttons. But she could hardly ignore it when people were reaching out to her. She pushed on, heading for the real estate office, following the Google directions. A slim woman with red hair was just coming out of Galway Properties when Tara hurried up to her, ducking her head so that the hood of her raincoat wouldn't blow off in the harsh wind. "I'm Tara Meehan," she said to the woman. "I work at Irish Revivals." "Heather Milton," the woman said. "Let's get inside." Tara propped her bike against the building and followed Heather into her office, where she opened a drawer in her desk and set a plain file on top of it. "The owner didn't want to wait any longer, and I can only imagine what you're going through," she said. "But I think you're doing the right thing. It's a fantastic spot, and I wouldn't want you to lose the deposit."
"Right," Tara said. She was getting way too adept at faking her way through conversations.
"We'll need the first and last month."
She pushed the file toward Tara. "I'm sorry," Tara said, "but I have no idea what my uncle put a deposit down on exactly."
"Oh," Heather said. "Silly me. I just assumed his employee filled you in."
Tara felt a bit of a jolt. His employee? Danny? Tara's mind flashed to Danny telling her all about his idea for opening a retail shop. Had he actually taken steps to do that behind Johnny's back? Heather was looking at her sideways.
"I'm sure someone did," Tara said, flashing a smile. "I must confess, some